Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and that was Die Auger with his new release, Die Anger. Die Auger happens to be a band that both my guest and I enjoy. We've interviewed him on this show, and we'll be having him back after the first of the year. My guest tonight is, I call her my evil sister. Her name is Andrea Dean Van Skoik, and she has a lot of different things that she's done in her life. She was an author. She has done voiceovers. She's appeared in magazines. She has owned two underground magazines. Now she's turned her skills, which are dark and macabre and ghoulish and funny and free-spirited, and to some, they're not sure what, to her own film productions. One is a silent film production called Cafe Muir, and the other one is called Destination Desolation Productions. Say that fast three times. She co-authored three books in a series with me called When the Fates Collide series. The first one was called When Fates Collide, Mardi Gras Bound, and When Fates Collide, Arm Candy. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have not read these books, they are fall down funny. We did these books with nothing but the internet between us. So, without further ado, I want to introduce my evil sister, Andrea Dean Van Squeak. Hey, sweetheart.
Hi, honey. Thanks for that marvelous introduction.
Well, you're quite welcome.
Can you run that noodler there from Hocus Pocus for a minute?
Marvelous, simply marvelous. Now, you know how I work. You've been around me long enough that before we get into the really, really good stuff, because I know you got some news, but we're gonna titillate the listening audience with that for a little while. Because,
oh, yeah, you know how I love to torture people.
Of course. We have this thing about us. a lot of our listeners don't know that you and I go way, way back to, like, 2007.
Oh, yeah, if not before then, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We go way, way back.
Yeah.
And we have... with this group that we had, ladies and gentlemen, of indie authors who got burned by a publisher who shall remain nameless because karma will get him, we've banded together over the years, and Andy and I formed a bond that sometimes people think we're the same person in our books. They don't understand that we wrote these books together. They don't understand how we did it. But we think alike. So I want you to tell me our history, your history, and then I'm going to ask you a question about something that I found out about you. So how did you get from point A to here?
Oh, wow. Let's see if I can give you the Cliff Notes version. Otherwise, we'll be here all night. I have always wanted to write books. And I tried the whole traditional thing back in the day, back when the word self-publishing was a pariah and you were called a hack and talentless. And if you were good, a publisher would pick your manuscript out of the hundreds of thousands they receive every single year. You know, I don't have to tell you, you've been there too.
Yep.
And I got tired of waiting for people to recognize my work because I had already gotten a fan base established with my poetry and these people wanted to read my work. So I was one of the pioneers of jumping into and wholeheartedly supporting self-publishing and print on demand. And I did things with it that people claimed you couldn't do. I was a Borders number one bestseller, and I've had people in what I called the country club who had an absolute fit over that, wouldn't have it, made every excuse in the world that they could, and it was just sour grapes, and they were jealous because I had been a Borders bestseller. And so I proved it could be done. And I wrote for many years and had my magazines, and I was on the convention circuit for a while, did a couple of cameos in movies and did a walk-on and really pushed myself to the point of collapse. So after about 8 years, I had gone about as much as I could go, and I decided abruptly to retire. And I did, and now I just have fun with everything I do. I retired my magazine, Twisted Dreams, about a year after I retired from writing. And you and I worked on our projects, which were absolutely hilarious and I loved. And they were so easy to write because I just imagined you were sitting there with me, which isn't difficult to do if people knew how our wavelengths work. And so I still write my poetry. Now I write freestyle, what I call freestyle haiku, because I don't do the whole, what is it, 575 or something. I don't do that whole thing. And I had somebody tell me, that's not haiku if you don't do that. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Back in the day, I was one of the poetry snobs that said if poetry wasn't lyrical and didn't rhyme, it wasn't poetry. So now I've turned like a whole hypocritical 180 here, and I'm like, oh, no, do freestyle. So I do that, and I write what I call nano horror. That's actually, there's someone on Twitter that follows me and reposts my stuff, and that's what they deem it as nano horror, and it's things that you can write in the 150 characters you get on Twitter. And I do that, and I make my avant-garde movies, silent and strange, and I also do music. I have my own little DJ, Mistress Macabre, I call myself, which is what my author name was too. And I enjoy everything now. I don't push myself so hard.
And of course, you know me, I do research on people. I found out things that most people don't find out because you know me, that's who I am. You've known me long enough, I found out all these little tidbits. And in my research, I found out that at one time you wanted to be a funeral director.
Yep, I did indeed. I did indeed. When I graduated from high school, I wanted more than anything to be a funeral director. And back then, it wasn't something, because you're talking 30 years ago, back then, it wasn't something that you could just go online or go take a class at a local college. So what I did was I come from what used to be a very small town. It's not now. It's a gigantic town now. But back in the day, I was able to call the next town over, which was even smaller than the town I was in at the time, and got a hold of a local mom-and-pop-owned funeral home. And the first words out of my mouth when the lady answered the phone was, this isn't a crank call. I have a serious question for you. And, of course, being country folk the way they were, she was just like, okay. And I said, I would like to be a funeral director. What do I need to do? And she said, okay, well, you have to get a degree in mortuary science. And there's only three colleges in the United States that teach it. There's one in Miami. There's one in, I think she said, Georgia, was it Georgia or New York? I know that's a big leap, but you're talking 30 years ago. I can't remember what she said. And one in Arizona. And I said, and she said, and you have to be a mortician. And I said, because, you know, at the time I didn't know a whole lot about it. I just knew that I wanted to own a funeral home or work in a funeral home. And I said, does that mean I have to embalm bodies? And she said, yes, that means that you have to do the embalming. And I said, oh, no, I'm a germaphobe. And she's like, oh, yeah, you can't do one without the other. So I'm an extreme germaphobe. So there went my dream of being a funeral director. I'd still love to own my own funeral home, but
now
I wish I could.
I thought that was very interesting because it fits within your, strange as it may seem, macabre, ghoulish, morose, because when one thinks of funeral homes, one thinks of Vincent Price and Lon Chaney and things like that. So, yeah, I can see you doing that because you would fit very well, and when you used to wear black all the time, you would fit very well as a funeral home director.
Have an antique funeral dress that I would have worn. Because I'm definitely a ghoul. I still hearken back to a lot of my desire to be a funeral director. I'm the type of person that looks at real photos and video online of people who've been in grisly car crashes, mass murders, suicides, things like that. I'm one of those sickos that look at those pictures and can't get enough of them.
And all the time you're writing stories in your head, I'm sure.
No, not anymore. I'm just thinking. I kind of waffle between, oh man, poor person, and what do you mean you're digitizing the picture out? How am I supposed to see it?
Well,
there's a reason I was FBI profiled when I was writing.
when you were writing, you had all these books out. And before we talk about books, are any of those books still available for folks to buy if they choose to buy them, or did you pull them all when you quit writing?
Oh no, they're all on Kindle. They're all on Kindle and paperback on Amazon.
Okay, give folks a rundown of those books and what they're about so that we can get the interest. I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this woman can do some serious writing. She will keep
you up at night writing.
So let the tell the folks what, and you even wrote a children's book, but I want to get
to that. I wrote two children's books. Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that in a minute. I want the folks to know the books that you have out that are on Kindle that they can download.
Okay, well, the first book that I ever wrote and my Borders bestseller was my Twisted Paranormal Mystery, The Two. And none of my books, I'll tell people right up front, none of my books are for the faint of heart. I wasn't joking. I was FBI profiled while I was an author. I had the local police watching me. Had one officer come up to me and say, we're watching you to make sure there's not someone that needs to know that you're walking around without supervision or without someone, without a chaperone. And, of course, at the time, I just ate that up. I look back now and I think, God, I probably should have been freaked out and scared out of my mind. At the time, I ate it up. I'm like, oh, cool. But and so my books are not for the easily offended. If you think you've got a strong stomach, my books might change your mind because, like I said, read them. There was a reason I was FBI profiled, although none of my books are based on any of my own dark fantasies or anything like that. That's what always used to surprise people about me, because I could jump in and out of my worlds like other people change the channel. I could go from writing a disgusting, depraved scene in my book to eating ice cream and watching Halloween Town or something on TV, or watching Matilda, or putting in a little silly movie like that and watching something like that after writing something that most people would throw up writing. So just be forewarned. As one person who reviewed, I think it was The Two, left a review, this is the most disgusting book I've ever read. You should be ashamed of yourself. Of course, I dined out on that for weeks. Oh, I dined out on that for weeks. I was like, ha-ha, the rest of you don't have reviews like this. But The Two was the one that kickstarted everything for me. And then A Man of Two Worlds is my next one. And it's stories within stories within stories that all tie together at the end. In my opinion, A Man of Two Worlds is still my most brilliant feat of storytelling. It was the one that I so desperately wanted to see as a movie. And then there was Michael. Michael was a fan favorite. Michael and A Man of Two Worlds both won some awards. I loved Michael. I thought it was a great book, but I never understood my fans' fascination with it. My heart was always with A Man of Two Worlds. And as was so typical with my writing career, my fans chose The Two and Michael over A Man of Two Worlds. And so then I wrote some vampire books. I wrote, it went through a bunch of different name changes when it changed different publishing companies. It started out as Left to the Night Alone, then it went to A Vampire Alone, and I think that's the last name it still has. You can probably find old copies of it on the internet. I enjoyed that book. I thought that book was also a brilliant piece of storytelling, and it just never got the momentum that I hoped it would. I really thought I outdid myself with that book, but as was typical, what I thought was wonderful, the fans just didn't warm up to, and the books that I wrote that I was like, nah, whatever, the fans thought were fabulous. And then I wrote Fallen from Shadow, Found in Shade, or Found in Grace. And then I wrote An Eternity to Make Our Way. I've been retired for 6 years, and you know, I've never even looked back at the titles of my books, except for the first three, and that was because they had such a huge impact on my life. I didn't get to push my vampire books the way I did my first three. But Fallen from Shadow, Found in Grace has a follow-up, An Eternity of Shadow.
And then there was the series that I never could pronounce the name.
Oh, The Grounds of Nakmashihan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those books were very, very interesting, and they pulled the reader right smack dab into the book.
Thank you. The first one was my crowning glory. I started writing that one when I was 15. And didn't get it published until I was in my late 30s.
So see, ladies and gentlemen, you can make dreams happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I finally had to let that one go. That was one of the ones that I kept tweaking it and kept going over it and kept saying, it's not good enough. I need to do this. I need to do that. And finally, I had an agent that just sent me an email one day and said, let the book go. You're done. Send it to me so I can get it out there. And if she hadn't done that, I probably would still be going over it to this day.
Yes, she is OCD, ladies and gentlemen. Trust me, she's OCD.
Very much so. Very
now,
much
tell
so.
Me about, yeah. Tell me about the children's books. And are they still in print?
One of them still is. You could probably find the other one on Lulu. I just don't advertise. And I have quite a few books still on Lulu.com. I think I still have them listed on there. They just never took off, but they were fun. They were fun for me to write. With the birth of my first nephew, and then I had a niece born shortly after, so I wrote a book called Katie and Josh and a New Family about two little black cats that get a new home after Halloween. And then I had another nephew born later on, and so then I wrote Graveyard Katie and Her Pals so my newest little nephew wouldn't feel left out. And Graveyard Katie and Her Pals, I know for a fact, is still on Amazon, and it's for ages between like 7 and 10.
That is interesting. I may have to get those for my little great-grandson.
Graveyard Katie and Her Pals is kind of like an anti-bullying book, too. Not to be mean, because, of course, Graveyard Katie is like if you and I were children back in the day with the whole goth movement, just think of us as like little 7-year-olds and just imagine how the kids in school would be. Graveyard Katie and Her Pals is kind of like a warning to not be mean to people or judge people just because and in spite of how vastly different from you they might be.
I like that premise a lot, especially in this day and age when bullying is an absolute, it's an epidemic almost.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Now, let's change gears for a minute. I also found out something about you, that you love the 1930s.
Oh, I do.
Why?
I really do. The elegance, the clothing, the decor, the architecture, the music. I watch the movie Harlem Nights, that Eddie Murphy movie.
Yes, one of my favorite movies.
Even though it's not quite the 1930s in there yet, that is one of my favorite movies. I simply listen to the music, look at the clothing, how dashing the men were, how elegant the women were, just how crisp and clean and society everything was back then. I'm just enamored with it. And I loved the music of Billie Holiday.
Oh, so do I.
Which surprises people, because I can go from listening to Cradle of Filth and Morbid Vomit and turn right around, listen to something from Morbid Vomit or Rotting Christ, and turn right around and put on Billie Holiday. And people are like, what is wrong with you?
Nothing. You're well-rounded.
I am. I'm multifaceted, and a lot of times people aren't sure how to deal with that.
Now, something else that maybe people don't know about you, and the question is, are you still an ordained minister, and do you still perform weddings?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I haven't performed one in about a year now, but I'm still available for anybody that doesn't want to get married in a church or doesn't want to get married. Because one of the reasons that I became a minister was to help people who struggled their entire lives on their own spiritual path, because I know what that's been like. And then there were two instances in my life, and I thought it kind of sucked both times. The first was mine and my husband's marriage. We've been married for 22 years. But when we got married, neither one of us had a church. And we went down to the courthouse and stood in a white room with a crappy table set up with a woman standing there reading from a book. It looked like we were being committed into an insane asylum, which, depending on your thoughts of marriage, could very well be. But
They do say marriage is.
Well, if you'd have seen the room where my husband and I got married, you would have thought, yeah, you're going straight to the rubber rooms.
You're in my mind just went right. People that hear me laugh, but they don't understand that I visualize that. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm saying it and you're visualizing it, and it's the exact same thing. But I thought that kind of sucked. I thought, you're going to perform marriages here at the courthouse and you don't even have a nice, decent room or anything set up? You take people into this room and it's like, oh, wow, yay. And then a friend of mine got married, and I wasn't a minister at the time. She got married in a notary public's house, which is fine, except that she got married in the room that time forgot. It looked like the room was something from the late 60s, early 70s. The woman had a tape recorder. Yes, a tape recorder with a cassette of crappy sounding beach music that was supposed to be like a Hawaiian getaway. And we stood in this woman's living room. I was my friend's maid of honor. We stood in this woman's living room. I felt like any minute some crazy serial killer was going to jump out from somewhere, because that's what it looked like, some really bad horror film. And I thought, this shouldn't be people's only choice just because they don't have a church to get married in, or because they can't afford a big fancy hall or something. There should be something available for people who are off the cuff. And that's another reason why I decided to become a minister. And I have enjoyed performing the marriages that I've performed.
And you've performed some strange ones too, haven't you?
The first one I ever performed was a combination pagan-gothic. The second one I performed was a combination pagan-gothic and kind of vampire. And the third one I did was a strictly Christian religious one. So I run the gamut. I have a master's degree in religious studies, so I have studied practically every religion there is. I will be a hypocrite and say that I tend to only study the religions that interest me, but I have studied most religions, so I can run the gamut of any religion. In fact, even when I'm out somewhere, even though I can't speak Latin very well, if I was the only person around, if someone needed last rites as an ordained minister, I could even give someone last rites. So I try to keep up with everything like that, so I'm prepared for any situation.
Now I'm going to change gears again, because you know that's how I roll.
Oh, yeah.
What made you decide to go into producing, directing, and letting loose silent black and white noir film? I mean, I understand the pull because I love the noir films. There's something about them, but the listening audience might not understand it. So what was the draw?
Well, as you know, because you've gone back so far with me, my book A Man of Two Worlds was in and out of movie production at least four times and got my hopes up only to have them dashed because people had what I called champagne taste and beer bottle pocketbooks. They saw the big picture, but they weren't able to get there. And in the meantime, I had a ton of short stories that I was writing. And I kept telling people, and even with my creative mind, the way my mind worked, I tried telling people, okay, look, why don't you break A Man of Two Worlds down and just film it like this? And then at a later date, if you want to go back and we can try to work a few things in here and there, we'll just make another one. We'll just make like a series out of it. But no one could seem to get on that same wavelength as me. So then I started writing my short stories, and I started offering them out there. No one, absolutely no one, could, even with my guidance and saying, okay, look, how about we just do this? You don't have to shoot it on a grand scale. Just do this. There's a market for it. Believe me, my fans want to see it. They're more the creative, eclectic type anyway. They're not the type that are going to run to the theater just because the new horror movie's out that everybody says is great. They're going to be the ones to go sit in the coffee house and watch the horror movie no one's ever heard of before where there's only like five people sitting there watching it. And so that's how my fans are. So they're not going to put down or look down on you for any creative differences. They'll understand. No one would do anything with my stories, no matter how simple they were. And I hadn't even heard the term until a veteran friend of mine in the industry. He said, a lot of what you write is vignettes. And I was like, what? And he said, vignettes. He said, they're just a minute or two long. And I said, yeah. I said, and it just seems to me like if someone has the means, they would be so simple to film. And still, no one ever did anything with them. So with the advent of technology and moving forward the way we have, I just got to burr up my butt one day, and I said, this idea is rattling around in my head. I'm going to film it. And I did, and that was my first movie, The Journey. And then I got my cast back together, and I filmed Morningstar. And then the next movie I'm going to film, when it gets a little cooler here, is going to be Midnight. And then I also made a little zombie short, too, just because I wanted to put my own spin on the zombie found footage stuff.
And the Journey is a very, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't seen this, you need to. And she's right. It's not more than 3 minutes long, but it is so, so powerful. And it's all silent. There's no speaking parts at all. Very simply filmed. But it's so powerful. Just the actors themselves. The old silent films, because actors could not speak because they were silent films, they had to use their facial expressions. And the cast that you have, especially your little princess, it's magnificent the way that they have taken these roles and used their facial expressions to convey what's going on in the film itself.
Yeah, isn't she something else? Would you believe that she did all of her takes in one shot?
I believe it.
I had to shoot the adults a couple of times. She did all of her takes in one shot.
Well, she is something else.
She really is.
That first film just hooked me, so I couldn't wait to see Morningstar. And it even surpassed the first one because, again, it was so simply done but so powerful.
And all of my movies have a message, and it might be a simple and a contrite message, but there's still a message there. if people can look deep enough.
And if they're willing to look deep beyond the surface.
Right.
Because if you just look at the surface, yeah, well, that's nice. But you have to look beyond the surface at what is going on from point A to point B to point C.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got to.
I really enjoyed filming them, and I'm looking forward to Midnight because Paige, the little princess, she's going to be the main star of this next film. And it's not really going to have a message behind it, so to speak. It's just something I've had an idea in my head, and I just really think that she could pull it off the best.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind because she's a natural.
She really is. She really is. And I'm really excited. And Lee and Alana, the married couple that I use, and Paige's, their little girl, they're all ready as well. So
now,
it's going to be a grand time.
I think that we have probably made the folks wait long enough. What do you think?
Yeah, we've tortured them long enough.
And I know they're just waiting with bated breath to know your news. And in leading up to this, ladies and gentlemen, Andrea's been on this journey for a while. And I say this at every show, if you have a dream, if you have a passion, if you have a vision, you never let anything or anyone steal that without your permission, because if you do, you cheat yourself and you cheat those around you. Andy has never let anyone steal her dream, and people have tried, trust me. But she just kept plodding forward, one foot in front of the other, and she just kept saying, it can be done, it can be done, it can be done. And lo and behold, it was done. Now you pick up the story.
One of my short stories, in fact, I believe my best short story ever, was one of the ones that I tried to push so hard to have made into a short film, because I just knew I didn't have the means to do it. I don't live in an area that is very open or friendly for filming. There's too much bureaucracy, too much red tape, and the last time I tried to do a film in my area, it was disastrous. The park where I was supposed to film waited until the day before filming to decide to tell me, after we had everything ready to go, that we couldn't film there because they didn't want that weirdness there and all kinds of other excuses. So I knew that I wouldn't be able to film something like this in my area. My little noir films are about as much as I can do in my area, which I love, and I'm happy with those, but I really wanted to see my short story, Border Patrol, as a film, and I just knew there was a way someone could do it. Well, I happened to cross paths with Dee McCauley of Thunderstriker Films and sent him the story just on a whim and said, hey, if you're ever looking for something that takes absolutely no budget, here you go. And he gets a ton of his own projects that he does. And so I didn't really expect him to look at Border Patrol with more than just a passing glance. And he messaged me right back and said, I can do this right now. And this was about a month or so ago, and it's already finished, and it is going to be, the trailer is out there. It's on YouTube, and the movie itself is going to be released Thanksgiving Day, U.S. Thanksgiving Day. Thunderstriker Films is based in Canada, so our Thanksgiving Day. I think they've already had their Thanksgiving Day.
And where will people be able to go see it once it's released?
It will be online? Be on YouTube. Yes, it'll be on YouTube, and it'll be right there for anybody who wants to see it. And we're really, really trying to get a buzz going about this because it's going to make the film fest circuit. I'm going to be in charge of submitting it to all the film fests because I have my own film fest as well, being a filmmaker. So I have all of the, I submit my own films to film fest. So I have all of the little ins and outs of the film fest world. Dee handles all of the filming and the editing and things like that, and then I handle the promotion part of it. So it's going to make the Film Fest circuit, and it's going to be on YouTube for everyone to see.
And tell the folks a little bit about it, because it's not your normal Border Patrol.
No, it's really not. It's about two Border Patrol agents in the midst of the zombie apocalypse that do their jobs very well. The rest of it, it's 3 minutes and 35 seconds, so I can't tell you any more than that without giving it away. But if you watch the trailer, you'll get a brief idea. And then there's also, there's a little something that Dee had one idea, I had another idea, so we're going to leave it up to the imaginations of the viewers to decide which way they want to take it. And that was a little bit of a stroke of genius that Dee and I didn't even realize. He had one vision, I had another, and when we came together, we were like, wait a minute. This will actually could work well because you're seeing it one way and there's going to be people that are going to see it your way. And then there's going to be people that are going to look at it and they're going to see it my way. And he said, well, which way is it?
And then there's going to be people that are going to see it an entirely different way.
Absolutely. And so he said, well, which way is it? And I said, it's up to the viewers. However they see it. It's however it will be. So that was a little added bonus that we didn't even realize was going to happen. Because if you've read the original story, then you know what the original story behind it was supposed to be. Well, like I said, Dee read the story and took it in a different direction. And then I saw what he did, and I made a comment, and he was like, wait a minute. And then he called me on a conference call, and I was like, well, oh, my gosh, this is going to work perfect, though. This is going to be absolutely perfect for the film because it's going to appeal to such a broad range of people thanks to his vision and my vision of it.
So, see, ladies and gentlemen, now, I purposely did not ask Andrea this question at the beginning of the show when I ask her history and we do the little things that I've researched about her. I've known this about her for years. What I wanted the audience to do was to understand all the accomplishments that this exemplary woman has done in a field where indies, for a long time, we have not been accepted, but between her and I and several others, we sort of broke that glass ceiling years ago, made our own way. But Andrea has an added challenge that she has to work with in order to make her dreams real. And I think you know what I'm fixing to ask you.
Because yep, go ahead and ask.
I want people to know that it's okay. What is auditory processing disorder, and how did you get it, and is there a cure?
I was a cheerleader in high school, which shocks a lot of people, because if you look at me now, people are like, seriously, you were a cheerleader? Yes, I was a cheerleader. And I was a cheerleader at the beginning of when you didn't just shake pom-poms. If you remember the old MTV video, Mickey, that had the cheerleaders in it and they did the walking pyramid, well, that was around my time, where cheerleaders were basically stunt people. We were looking to do all the cool things and take cheerleading from being rah-rah to being the next flaming stunt show with the hoops of fire and anything else that you can imagine. Well, I was one of the few people, because I was training for the Olympics in gymnastics at 10 years old. So I was the only one on my squad with a gymnastics background. So I did all the crazy stunts. And we were at the basketball tournament for my high school. Channel 6, Channel 10, and Channel 9 were there filming the championship. my partner and I got out on the floor and we did what was called a toe pitch. And it's where you put your foot in someone's interlocked hands and they flip you backward. And you do a backflip and you land. Well, someone walked behind me and she tried to stop me and I went back anyway. Landed on my forehead, crushed the front of my skull, jammed my neck down into my spine, bit a hole the size of a dime in my cheek, and had a huge, I probably had trauma on the brain, but I had the type of parents that didn't believe in doctors. You didn't go to doctors unless you were having a heart attack or you had severed a major limb and you had to run to the emergency room. And so my cheerleading coach at the time panicked, let my boyfriend at the time drive me home. My dad contacted a nurse that used to live behind us, and he came down and said for them just to keep me up for the next couple of hours. And that was it. I went to school the next day. My eyes swelled shut eventually. I had a huge blood knot move down my face, spread my nose out across my face. I looked really funny. And that was that. Didn't think anything more about it until I graduated high school, got out and got a job, and was talking to a coworker one day, and she asked me a question. All I heard was, yeah. And I looked at her and said, what? She asked me again. And this time I picked out, do you? And I looked at her again and I said, what? What are you saying? And she looked at me for the last time and started raising her hand up like she was eating. And she said, do you want to go get something to eat? And she stressed the eat and had her moving her hand up and down. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Everything she had said to me sounded like, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, you know, we were at work. It was noisy. It was busy. I wasn't really paying close attention to her, and I kind of brushed it off. And then I started noticing, I was 19 by that time, so it had taken approximately a year because I was a senior, and I think I was a senior in high school when I had my accident when I was dropped on my head. And dropped on my head on a gym floor, which was concrete underneath, layered with a very thin topping of rubber. So, yeah, I crashed down pretty badly on a hard gym floor. And didn't think anything more about it. Started noticing. Time would go on. Time would go on. I would only catch a few words here and there. Tried to talk to people about it. No one knew what I was talking about because I can hear everything. I can hear someone shut a car door outside. I can hear an alarm go off down the street. But unless I am looking right at you when you speak to me, I will only catch 40 to 50% of what you say. I worked as an executive administrative assistant for many, many years, and I hid my disability. I learned to cope, make excuses. I had my own adaptation. If I didn't catch something, I would say, oh, sorry, it was noisy in here. What, can you repeat that for me? I also got to where I was dyslexic. So I would write numbers backward. I even started speaking backward at one time. Stress always made it worse, and I was in a very high stress level industry. I, for 30 years, I coped. And it wasn't until about 25 years into my disability when I finally, it took its toll on me psychologically. I almost had a breakdown because I had been to doctor after doctor after doctor that kept telling me I was faking, I had just, I wasn't paying attention. I needed to focus. And I finally ended up being sent to the YMCA Speech and Therapy Center. And I was given a test of 20 questions. As the woman put it, when she graded my test, I miserably failed 18 out of the 20 questions. And she said, you have auditory processing disorder. I sat there and bawled like a baby because for once someone was listening to me and I wasn't being told that it was all in my head and I was imagining and I just wasn't paying attention and I was lazy. And now I'd like to think that I paved the way for others because now auditory processing disorder is very, very common. It's also known as concussive trauma or closed head trauma. It's a neurological impairment that happens due to, you see it with a lot of the returning soldiers from the wars over in the Middle East. They have IEDs go off too close to them. They're in a tank that's bombed. It's a concussive head trauma.
So that being said, because we're going to run out of time, I'm bringing you back in February because we didn't touch half of what we needed to talk about tonight.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, quickly, because I want you to tell people where you can be found before we end the show, tell people that are dreamers, even if they have a disability, what they need to do.
Just do it. Don't let anyone stop you no matter what. Grow a thick skin. Refuse to be put down. Do whatever you want to do. I had people start hate threads about me on websites that didn't even know me. I had people call me crazy. I had every kind of mountain thrown in front of me that you can imagine. You just have to swallow it, go on, and do it. Don't let anyone stop you no matter what. I had friends turn their backs on me. Don't let anything stop me. I know not you. I know not you because you and I are too much alike.
Exactly. Where can you be found, my sweet sister?
The best place to find me is on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, but I don't do a whole lot on there. I have a page parked there for my film company. But the best place to find me is on Twitter, and I'm at Bohemian Celt.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason, and my guest tonight is Andrea Dean Van Skoyek. Tomorrow night, which is Thursday night, at 8 o'clock, my guest will be author Sandy Wright. At the 9 o'clock hour, it will be Leanne Sotomayor Murphy, who is also an author. We are redoing Leanne's show because the other night when we did her show, her telephone was possessed. Guess the gremlins got into it. But tonight's show, we've covered a lot, and you are coming back in February, right? I'm going to give you a date.
Oh, yes.
And you'll be ready. Okay.
Of course.
We didn't even cover a third of what I wanted to talk to my sweet friend about. She and I could talk all night because we don't talk that often. But what we're both trying to tell you is if you have a dream, if you have a passion, if you have a platform, whatever it is in life, whether you're challenged or not, and believe me, ladies and gentlemen, when I say, and Andy will attest to this, every one of us is challenged. And if you say, no, I'm not, you're lying.
Absolutely.
I'm left-handed in a right-handed world. I am dyslexic. I stutter when I talk. And those of you who've listened on this show know that when I get tired, I twist my words. I call people names that's not their name. I can't get words out. But I don't care any more than Andy cares that she has this challenge. I don't call it a disability. I call it a challenge. Because we are successful in our own right. Am I right, Andy?
Oh, we are. We've done things that people deemed were impossible.
Exactly. We are successful. This radio is a testament to it. I ran the numbers today. We are at 4,551 listeners.
Wow.
Between all the podcasts and the live show, We are almost to 5,000 listeners, and that is since July the 27th.
So, but you know what? For me, people probably be like, oh, well, you know, she's such a good friend of yours, and she doesn't seem very excited. I am excited for you, but honestly, none of this shocks me. That's why I'm not like, oh, my God, wow, that's unbelievable. It's like, oh, yeah, that's Yvonne. If you know Yvonne, none of this is a shock at all. It's not even a mild surprise.
It's a normal day for us, right?
It is. It's a normal day for you because that's just how you are.
Well, and real quickly, that brings up another thing. Don't overthink things, ladies and gentlemen. I had a friend of mine tell me, Yvonne doesn't overthink things. If she wants to do something, she does it. This radio show is a 5-year dream. I've been putting this thing together for 5 years, and now I can do it because my husband is disabled, so I cannot do a lot of events anymore because I have to have someone stay with him. So this show is like a new avenue to get my work out, to get my guest work out, to interact with people and to help them succeed, because I firmly believe that we're only as successful as we allow others to be. And Andy, would you agree with that statement?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, because my husband's health is failing as well. So I don't do the convention circuit or anything anymore either. So what you do is if there's a mountain there, you just start climbing.
Or you go through it.
Or you go through it. You tunnel your way through it. You be like a little lemming. You start digging your way through it, like in the old game that they used to have with the cute little lemmings. You start digging your way through it, or you find a way to climb over it. But what you don't do is just stand there and say, oh, well, I can't do it anymore. Oh, well, that door's closed, so I guess we're done. Now that door's closed, you either open another door or you open a window and climb through. But you don't ever stop.
Or you make your own door, ladies and gentlemen. With the internet being the way it is, and with the way that we as indie artists, and I'm not just talking about authors, I'm talking about filmmakers, I'm talking about musicians, I'm talking about artists.
Oh, yeah, because that's how I got my films made. I decided to just start making my own films because you can do that now. With the advent of technology, you can do that now.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you say I've got a dream, but then you ain't got no dream. And I know that's bad English, it's bad language, but I'm making a point. If you say, I want to do this, but then you really don't want to do it. You're already finding reasons not to. And
I saw this when I made my first film, shortly after I released The Journey. And I saw this online. Someone said, don't sit there and say, I can't make a film. I don't have a way to make a film. If you have a smartphone, you have a way to make a film.
Absolutely.
You're only limited by what you decide you're limited by.
And you're only limited by your own imagination and your own dreams and desires. Andy and I have been at this a long, long time. We started this when people didn't think it could happen. So understand that this radio show, Off the Chain, is a dream come true. If you have a platform, if you have an art, if you have a book, if you have music, if you even have a business, or if you just want to sit down and have a fireside chat, you contact me because you will be heard. Trust me. I will get you on this show. That's why it's called Off. Remember, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, Sandy Wright at the 8 o'clock hour. At 9 o'clock, Leanne Sotomayor Murphy. That's a long name. They're both authors. My sweet friend, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, and I will send you a date for February. Thank you for the privilege and the honor of letting me interview you on my show. I love you dearly.
Oh, thank you, my sister. I love you, too. And one of these days, we've got to get to writing another book because I know people have got to want more. If they've read our books, they need some Depends already. They'll have to buy more.
See, there you are in my head again. You heard it first, ladies and gentlemen, the fourth in this When Fates Collide series. It will be done.
Oh, absolutely, because we have too much fun.
Oh, yeah, we do. So, ladies and gentlemen, Off the Chain with your host, Yvonne Mason, my guest, Andrea Ding-Vanskoyk. Look her up on Bohemian Kelt on Twitter. Look her up on Facebook. Support her and watch Border Patrol on Thanksgiving Day.
Woo-hoo!
On YouTube. Woohoo! And with
I'm
that,
so excited. Thank you, my dearest sister. I love you.
I love you, too. And you hang on after the show goes dead because we'll talk a minute. And with that, ladies
okay.
and gentlemen, I say until tomorrow night, we're off the chain. Okay, now we'll go into archives for a few minutes because people can hear us. Yeah,
right.
there was so much I wanted to talk about, so we will do that in February, and we'll talk about how well Border Patrol is going.
Oh yeah. We've got you and I could just talk all night. We could just make a show of just you and I talking. It'd be like a 6 or 7 hour show.
That is true.
It's true that I guess that's why they only give you so much time on blog talk because you get people like you and I together and we could just sit and chat all night.
Yeah, being an all night show. So in February, well, what I want you to do, I wanted you to co-host with me on some shows if you want to. That will also help give you more exposure for your film and all that good stuff.
Of course I will. You know I don't deny my sister anything.
Okay. Well, I will send you the shows. Do you know, have you heard of Thomas L. Mulvey? I mean, Thomas S. Mulvey? He's going to be on Saturday night. His real name is Paul Hurd, but he writes under Thomas S. Mulvey, and he writes some interesting stuff.
No, I'm not sure. I may have heard of him. Another thing that I didn't cover, I probably rattled on far too long about the APD. It's just that when it was recognized, that was like a huge milestone in my life. Another thing that the APD causes is it causes cognitive disorder, so my memory is going. So I may or may not have heard of him at one time. It might click eventually, but for right now, I can tell you, no, I don't recognize the name.
Well, he wrote a book called Blood Necklace. You would find it interesting. If you want to play Saturday night and help me interview him, look him up. He's my friend on Facebook. Look him up and look his history up, and we'll double team him with questions and. Because he is an interesting character.
Well, Saturday night, the weekends for the most part, unless it's just like you and I doing something, I try to spend with Charlie because he has a tendency to get real depressed because he's in the early stages of dementia.
Yeah,
so
I remember that. Okay.
Has a tendency, yeah. So if it would be easier for me during the week if you have people on during the week.
Okay. Let's do that then. I'll see what I've got.
Yeah, because...
Oh, I know who you want to come on with me. You want to come in and co-host with me and Kelly with Time for Trail, the Reaper.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'll
so just
fun.
Let me know when that is.
And what I'll do is I'll make the show an hour and a half instead of just an hour, and between the three of us we can tag team him, and he'll think he's done died and gone to heaven. We're not going to tell him, though. It'll be a surprise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That'll be very cool. Yeah.
Okay. I'll send you the information. I'll send you the show and the time, and I'll change it to an hour and a half, and we'll tag team him. And then I'll set your date for February.
That will be awesome.
And what we can do, what I'd like to do, because I wanted to get into your passions, and one of your passions is the auditory processing disorder. Talk a little bit more about it and talk about the cognitive problems that you're beginning to have. And
yeah.
That you're still, but you're still functioning, not just functioning, but you still have a quality of life and doing your thing.
Oh, absolutely, and it's not easy. And I've always said I don't want anyone to have to go through what I went through to get a diagnosis. I had doctors laugh at me.
We'll do your show. The next show we do with you, we'll do an hour and a half because, like I said, I got almost 2 pages of stuff that I wanted to cover, and we didn't get to cover it. So we'll do your show in February for an hour and a half, and then I'll change Reaper's show to an hour and a half, and we'll just have a gay old time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, let me go and get this show to bed and get it uploaded, and I will tag you when I put the podcast up so you can start spreading the news.
Absolutely. That will be wonderful, my dear sister.
I love you, honey.
I love you, too. We need to get together again sometime.
Yes, we do.
If nothing else, just so Charlie can jack worship.
Wait till I go tell him so he can pay homage.
Oh, yes. Whatever he's sitting in, whatever he's sitting on, he'll probably laugh so hard he'll fall off of it.
Oh, there you go. Well, let me
he'll probably
go
be
and
like,
tell
what?
The man. Right,
we really need to get together at some point. We need to get together. We need to do something. We need to go somewhere, all of us, at some point.
If we just meet in the middle of the state somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be
work on that for next year. We'll put that on our bucket list for next year.
Oh, absolutely. Because you and I have all kinds of carnage to spread. I love you, my honey, and I will see you, talk to you, everything very, very soon.
All right, I love you too, darling. Talk at you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.